7:41, so the 71st Cannes Film Festival, it was certainly more than a feast of movies, red carpets, glamour. In a sense, it set the stage for the continuation of the Me Too and Time's Up movements. We'll talk in more detail about a particularly hit Korean movie that emerged from the festival in a few moments. But first, let's introduce Melissa Silverstein, activist and founder and publisher of Women in Hollywood, who participated in the Women's March and joins us on the line after returning from Cannes. Thank you very much for taking the time today.
Happy to be here.
So we often associate these sorts of festivals with glamour. And when we think of glamour, it's often the well-paid and beautiful actresses that set the standard. This is something that's shifting, it seems, and shifting very fast. And we've seen that, haven't we, with the film festival in Cannes, and how really the basic right to be who you want to be as a woman is coming to the fore on these kinds of stages. Can you tell us why that's so significant?
Well, I actually don't necessarily agree that it has changed so much at Cannes. We did have a march, but Cannes really thrives on pictures of women, women on the red carpet, and putting women on display lots more than other places do. And so what is happening now, especially in Cannes, is kind of a confrontation between people pushing forward in this kind of Me Too, Time's Up moment where women are asserting themselves in different ways with the old style glamour of Cannes, which really kind of pushes forward women as commodities.
We saw the leaders of the festival sign a gender equality pledge promising to make their selection process more transparent and to push their executive boards toward gender parity. I'm directly quoting from Associated Press there. Is that not a sign of some form of victory, at least?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the march up the steps was historic, and getting them to take seriously and sign this pledge, absolutely. Now the key comes to actually holding accountability for this pledge, being much more transparent about how films get picked, understanding that we are in the 21st century and we need to see some progress in the amount of women competing at the highest levels of the business. And Cannes is the biggest festival in the world. And when you have only three movies directed by women out of 21, you know, it sends a message.
What about one of the moments that stands out in my mind from the last few days, Kristen Stewart walking barefoot down the red carpet? Was that about refusing to wear high heels? Was it about her own barefoot campaign? How does that fit into the bigger picture for you?
Well, I'm not 100% sure of why she took her shoes off, but everybody kind of took it as a moment where it says, you know, we are our own people. And Kristen's been saying these things for a long time. We are our own people. These rules about how we should look and how we should act and what shoes we should wear, that time is over. And whether or not it was a statement on her part, people took it as a sign of women standing up and saying no more.
I mean, it's fair to say, though, still that a lot of women would love to wear heels or wear heels as part of their ordinary day for all sorts of reasons. But the point is then it's about not feeling pressured to do that as a result of social pressure. Is that right?
Well, of course. I mean, to wear whatever you want. I mean, the whole point is that you shouldn't have to wear a certain uniform to appear somewhere to adhere to rules of the patriarchy that were made when, you know, women weren't making any rules.
So if women by their own choice, that, you know, these high-profile actresses decide that they still want to wear glamorous dresses, high heels, and if the photos still look very much the same in future years, but the implication is clear that they're doing it because they want to do that, does that make all the difference?
Let's be clear. This is not about photos. This is not about heels. This is about opportunities for women to appear at the highest levels of business, for women to be paid equally, for all the things that are happening, you know, that in this movement, for women not to be sexually harassed on the set, for women not to be sexually assaulted at the Cannes Film Festival. This is not, you know, if we spend our time on pictures and how women look on the red carpet, while a symbol, it's not the root of the issue is how women are treated, that women need to be fully.
Yeah, no, I completely see that. I just wonder, coming back to what you said at the beginning of this interview, whether it's almost unhelpful to have such prominent symbols of the feminine form being so glamorous, being so beautiful, and having that as something that young girls might naturally feel some pressure to aspire to.
Well, that's the world that we live in. I mean, there's so much pressure on how you look, and but seeing people, you know, look differently and all different kinds of body types, all different ages, all different skin colors, people who are disabled, all these different kind of images help change our world. Transgender people help change our world. It's not whether you're wearing a long dress because you're supposed to wear a long dress, or, you know, I don't know a single woman who wears heels because that's their everyday attire. I mean, it's the thing that's been created to, you know, do something for your leg. And when people are not on a red carpet, they're not wearing heels.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's just another piece of the conversation. But I think with Cannes, the issue really is about access to opportunity. And Cannes is a place where so many producers come and they pitch their movies and they get money. And women really don't have the same kind of access to capital. So if you don't have the access to capital, you don't have the access to opportunity, then you really can't operate at the top level of the business.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting discussion that we could stretch to men and women, I guess, how far we go to try and make ourselves more attractive and why we do that. But before I sort of dismiss the role of leading actresses in the Me Too campaign, I mean, we should also point out that the Italian actress Asia Argento, she did really go over Harvey Weinstein, didn't she, and express her anger towards the fact that abusers were there in the audience at the closing ceremony.
Yeah. I think she really stood up and she said that this festival is complicit and I was raped here. And that's something that was like glossed over for most of the festival in terms of public displays. And she really, you know, made people stand up and listen and said, you know, this festival is over now. And yet you still have a lot of work to do and accountability. And I know many women were sexually harassed at the festival this year still. And women were still treated as, you know, eye candy. So this festival still has a ton of work to do. This culture has a ton of work to do. It's really not about, you know, clothing. It's about equality.
Yeah. And thank you for making that point emphatically. Melissa Silverstein, founder and publisher of Women in Hollywood.
Got it.
Pleasure to have you on the line. It's an issue that continues to go on. I hear stories far too often from girls and women in my own life or friends of the family who are coming forward and telling me still stories of their own abuse here in Seoul. And #1013 for 51 per message if you want to keep that conversation going. Got to keep the awareness up. But let's shift our focus, staying with Cannes, but to a Korean movie that drew plenty of attention. To me, the world is a mystery, so said Jong-soo, struggling young man, aspiring writer. In the movie Burning, played by Yoo Ah-in, directed by Lee Chang-dong, by the way. It didn't necessarily do as well as it might have done at the Cannes Festival, but it did earn the highest ever score from critics, winning the International Federation of Film Critics Prize for Best Film. So it certainly has been drawing plenty of attention, and that in itself is a huge achievement. Darcy Packett, film critic based in Korea, joins us on the line to tell us more about it. Thank you for taking the time.
Good morning.
Should it have gone further with the awards, by the way, at Cannes?
Well, I was hoping that it would, but these things are very unpredictable because, you know, a jury is made up of a number of different personalities, and you can never really predict how those personalities are going to combine with each other. In fact, the previous record holder for the top, you know, critical marks in this jury grid at Cannes was called Toni Erdmann. It was a German film, and that film didn't win any awards either. So Burning has some company in that respect.
And it has, as I said, been drawing a lot of newspaper or internet column inches. Anyone who's read any of those reviews will, I'm sure, be inspired to watch it. What is it that's so searing about this movie?
I mean, it's hard to sum up in just a few words. If I had to, I'd say that, you know, it's a beautiful film and it's a very enigmatic film at the same time. So, I mean, first of all, the way that it's presented, I mean, the cinematography in the film is really quite amazing. And it's not that it's stylish or exaggerated in any way. Like, it's a very natural kind of earthy film, but the way that it's shot is really quite amazing. And the other thing is that, I mean, there's so much emotion in the film. It suggests so much without necessarily kind of giving you one particular interpretation. So it's very much a film that everybody who watches it will have a different impression. You can feel that by reading the reviews of the film. Like, each critic seems to be describing a slightly different film. And it's because really, you know, so much of the film is open to interpretation. From a film critic's point of view, that's very exciting. And, you know, some viewers might find that frustrating, that it doesn't kind of leave you with a clear message at the end. On the other hand, it gives you so much to think about that, you know, it's a film that you won't soon forget after you see it.
It's a 2.5-hour movie, isn't it? But it's based on a short story, Murakami short story. Why did it need to be so long?
It's a very short story as well.
Yeah.
You know, the short story itself is just a few pages. I mean, to me, other people might disagree. I didn't feel that it was long as I was watching it. Like, the film really pulled me in. He does take his time to present his characters and the situations that they're in. And it is, you know, he does work on kind of a slow level. It's like kind of he wants to bring the viewer, to slow down the viewer and to get them to just kind of watch and see what the characters are doing. I mean, most films kind of pull you along, but in this case, he, rather than pull you into the film's rhythm, it kind of slows you down so that you're simply an observer and you're seeing what's going on. And I think that tempo, that pace, is kind of an important aspect of the film as well.
The short story, if anyone wants to check it out, is Murakami's Barn Burning. In this movie, I don't want to give too much away. It's not so much a barn, is it? But still, do you think it, for anyone who enjoys the short story, they will recognize much of it in the movie?
I think so. You know, the story itself is also, again, it's just practically a few pages long, and it's a story with a lot of mystery in it. So it describes a very odd hobby by one of the main characters who likes to burn down abandoned barns. Mm. And, you know, Korea doesn't have a lot of abandoned barns, and so they've modified that in that sense. But, I mean, the central thing is just this idea that you have, you know, a character, one who comes from immense privilege, and another character who's really kind of struggling. You know, it's a character who wants to become a novelist, but, you know, is facing kind of a really uncertain future. And then there's a third character, a woman who is, it's not a traditional love triangle, I would say, but it's this very complicated relationship that develops.
Understood. We are very short of time now, but was it interesting to you that you've got this mutual love interest, if I can refer to the character Haemi in that way, played by a new face in Chun Jong-soo, but then you've got The Walking Dead, Steven Yeun as
yes.
Ben, the Golden Spoon character. So you've got something very recognisable there with an opportunity to carve new faces in this movie.
I know, I thought his image kind of brought a lot to the film, and the fact that, you know, he is an actor from who's established himself in another culture. And, you know, in the film, he represents privilege. And so in a weird way, kind of like you know, real life image kind of was a positive effect on the portrayal of the character, I thought.
Interesting. Well, I'm sure you've inspired a few people to check it out as well. And yes, we've been assured by Darcy Packett, at least, that 2.5 hours won't necessarily feel that long. And it's wonderful, as always, to have you on the line.
Okay, great to be here.
Happy Buddha's birthday to you. Darcy Packett, film critic, taking the time out of the national holiday to speak with us today.